This is a true story taken from an actual medical file.
The word hypochondria is defined in the medical encyclopedia as follows: undue preoccupation with one's real or supposed ailments. More of a hobby than an illness. It differs from malingering and hysteria. The malingerer may say he has a headache when he has none, simply to avoid work. The hysteric does a similar thing at an unconscious level and gets a real headache from no physical cause. But the hypochondriac spends a happy day trying out new remedies for the headache that might come on. The problem here is that people become so used to the imagined illnesses of the hypochondriac that when real illness strikes, they are totally unprepared and tend to turn a blind eye. You might say, a case of cry wolf. Well, that's exactly what I've called my story tonight. Cry wolf.
Medical file. Factual stories of the men and women whose vigilance guards our lives. A reconstruction of clinical case histories, step by step with the doctors who were there. Medical file.
Two brothers, Paul and Ivor. Patients of a colleague of mine. Paul was the younger of the two, and from his earliest days showed quite a remarkable charm and personality, which the unfortunate Ivor found difficult to match, in spite of a superior intellect. Ivor was small, dark and introspective, his pinched features giving the appearance of a perpetual scowl. The absolute antithesis of his brother Paul, who was tall, fair, with a ready smile upon his handsome face. It wasn't unnatural, therefore, for both family and stranger alike to take more readily to the more attractive of the two brothers, leaving the less fortunate Ivor to fend for himself. The situation might have continued indefinitely had Ivor not, at the age of 8, contracted a severe case of measles. And though the illness was unpleasant, Ivor enjoyed being the center of attention. But the illness was short-lived, and within a few weeks of recovery, Paul was once again basking in the limelight, especially since he'd suddenly shown an unsuspected talent for the piano. And then one evening, some months later...
David! David!
What, my dear?
Will you switch that off for a moment, please?
Who's the Emperor? Can
I she... want to talk to you.
Well, can't it wait?
Well, David, please!
Oh, very... Now.
Thank you.
What is it?
Ivor.
And what about him?
Well, I'm rather concerned.
Why?
Well, he seems so... David, I think he's ill.
Ill? Well, I hadn't noticed.
Well, he isn't eating properly.
Oh, really, Janice?
No, I'm serious. At supper tonight, he hardly touched a thing.
Well, probably wasn't hungry. Do you mean to say you interrupted my concert?
David, it isn't the first time. And I think he's losing weight.
What? Imagination.
I can't deny the evidence of my own eyes, David. Paul's nearly 2 years younger.
Entirely different build, my dear. Ivor's always been small and wiry.
Wiry, yes, but not skinny.
All right, what do you propose? Force feeding? It's not a Strasbourg goose.
Oh, don't be absurd.
I'm not being absurd. I think you're overreacting to a simple phase of adolescence.
All right, but I looked in on him just now.
And?
He was crying.
What on earth for?
But I've no idea.
Well, didn't you ask?
He wouldn't tell me. And then...
Well, yes.
He said he had a headache.
Headache?
David, there's definitely something wrong. I'm going to telephone Dr. Sinclair.
Not at this time of night.
Oh, very well. First thing in the morning. Come in. Oh, doctor. How is he?
Well, I've given him a thorough examination, and I'm afraid... Rather happy to say, I can find nothing wrong with the child.
But
he did complain of a headache, however. But I shouldn't think that's desperately serious. I notice he has a lot of books. Does he read a great deal?
Well, a fair bit, yes. He's very keen on history.
Hmm. Well, it could be eye strain. Maybe we should have his eyes tested.
But Doctor, isn't he underweight?
Yes, you mentioned that. Well, he is, but not unduly so.
He doesn't eat.
Oh, come now.
Well, very little.
Look, he isn't suffering from malnutrition. He just has a naturally small appetite. I shouldn't worry too much about his eating habits. But I don't think an eye test would do any harm.
Very well, Doctor. Well,
I'll arrange it.
It was discovered that Ivor had slight astigmatism in his right eye, and spectacles were prescribed accordingly, no other ill effects being apparent. However, he continued to mope. He refused certain foods. Complained they made him feel sick or caused him stomach pains, until special meals had to be prepared for fear of upsetting his delicate stomach. At school, too, he became a difficult pupil. Tiring quickly, he was unable to cope with any kind of sport, and was ultimately excused all forms of physical culture. But when, on one occasion, an overzealous PT instructor insisted upon Ivor taking part in the gentle art of boxing, causing him to return home with a bloodied nose, Ivor's mother was incensed. She stormed into the school, demanding an interview with the culprit.
Boy?
Yes, ma'am?
Where will I find Mr. James?
He'll be in the staff room, I expect. Tea break, that door there.
Thank you. Which one of you is Mr. James?
Oh, I'm James.
I want a word with you, please.
Oh, yes, of course. What is it?
I'm Ivor's mother.
Ivor?
That boy you sent home yesterday with a half-broken nose.
Broken? Oh, Woods. Oh, come now, isn't that a little exaggerated? His nose.
No, thanks to you. I thought it was made abundantly clear.
Mr. Edwards, you can't talk here.
I see no reason why not.
You're upset.
I'm absolutely furious.
Then wouldn't it be better to find somewhere a little less public? I'm sure there's an empty classroom.
Well, very well.
I take it that you're more than somewhat put out that I disregarded your wishes by encouraging your son to take part in a little physical exercise.
From what I gather, not so much encouraging as bullying.
Oh, that's not strictly true.
Are you accusing my son of lying?
Not at all. In here, please. Now, first of all, let me say...
First, let me say, you were perfectly aware that the headmaster had issued instructions that on no account was Ivor to participate in any form of physical activity. He's a very delicate child.
Rubbish.
What did you say?
I said rubbish.
How dare you?
Forgive me, Mrs. Woods, but your child is not delicate.
Allow me, please, to know the condition of my own son's health.
I would suggest that you don't know your own son at all. I repeat, he is not delicate. If you doubt me, you'd best take a look at his opponent.
I have
no... It was little short of a vicious attack. No friendly bout. I had to pull him off the boy.
What?
His nose only began to bleed when he slipped and cracked it against the post.
I don't believe a word of it.
Oh, I'm sure you don't.
I'm not quite sure what you intimate by that remark.
Simply that you only believe what you choose to believe.
You're a very insolent young man. I shall make a point of...
Reporting me to the head? Oh, do, by all means. But I feel you get very little change from him. He's of a similar opinion that your child is a devious malingerer, encouraged by an overindulgent mother who chooses to treat her child as the delicate flower that he's not.
This is quite outrageous.
Oh, isn't it? And since this conversation is probably going to cost me my job, I may as well have the satisfaction of being brutally frank. There's nothing wrong with your child that a few cold baths and an occasional box round the ears won't cure. He's playing for sympathy, seeking attention.
How dare you?
You have a second son, I believe. An accomplished pianist. The apple of his father's eye.
How do you know?
I keep my ears open. Treat them equally. Encourage both in the right way. And I think you'll find your delicate flower will blossom into a hardy shrub. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a class. Good day.
This heavy-handed advice, given indignantly by the frustrated young teacher, though right in sentiment, was a little crude. And Mrs. Woods, a stubborn woman, was unmoved, except to increase anger. That night, she discussed it with her bewildered husband.
He actually said that, did he?
I tell you, David, I will not tolerate my son's remaining at that school a day longer.
You consider his sentiments a little ill-placed, do you?
I must say you're taking the whole matter very lightly.
Well, how do you expect me to behave? You go storming into the school, demanding...
I did nothing of the kind. I merely...
Fool of yourself. And for what? Simply because one of your sons tripped and cracked his nose.
And that I consider a complete fabrication.
Do you? Well, neither you nor I was there. And to be quite honest, I'm inclined to agree with the young man. You do mollycoddle the boy.
David!
What do you want to do? Turn him into a pansy? You don't find Paul screaming out for sympathy?
But of course we all know Paul's your favorite, simply because he plays your precious music. Ivor needs encouraging, too.
Perhaps if he showed a little aptitude, I'd have something to encourage him for. I'm certainly not encouraging him in his perpetual sniveling and whining. And as far as the school's concerned, it's a good school, and they both stay. And the next time Ivor complains of being sickly, never mind Dr. Sinclair, give him a good dose of Epsom salt. That'll soon cure him.
Meanwhile, Paul continued to progress with his music until shortly after the Second World War, he entered the Royal Academy of Music as a full-time student. At this time, both brothers were in their teens, and it was customary for their father to invite friends in from time to time to be entertained by Paul at the piano.
Mother. Mother.
Shh. What is it, dear? Is there something wrong?
I've got a...
Ivor's ill.
He's always ill. Oh. Tend to be quiet. I'll be ill somewhere else. I'd better leave.
Well, of course, dear. Shall I come?
No, no. I can manage. Excuse me, please. For heaven's sake. I'm sorry, Father.
Do it, I'm going.
Well, the boy's in pain. Can't you see?
He's stopping the entire room.
David, quickly, phone Dr. Sinclair.
Wait, this isn't the limit.
David, how can you be so heartless? Will you please telephone?
If this turns out to be another false alarm...
I'm sorry, Father.
Terrible, sorry, everyone.
So you ought to be. I've just about had as much as I can stomach.
David! He's unconscious!
After the incident of Ivor's collapse, Dr. Sinclair arranged for Ivor to be admitted to a sanatorium on the Isle of Wight for observation. But when, after several costly months, the doctors could find no apparent reason for Ivor's repeated bouts of ill health, his father lost patience, refusing to indulge him further in his imagined condition. Instead, he devoted all his time to Paul, who was about to embark on a career as a concert pianist. Then, quite suddenly, he had a coronary, and within a few days had died. Janice, after the loss of her husband, felt a desire to return to her native Australia, wishing to take the boys with her. But such a break would have had a detrimental effect on Paul's career. And Ivor, at this time, had been articled to a firm of chartered accountants, where he was to remain till becoming a fully-fledged accountant. Dr. Sinclair promised to keep an eye on the brothers, now in their early 20s. But Janice was still concerned, and the night before her flight spoke to Paul on the subject of his brother.
How's the packing?
Oh, Paul, I'm practically through.
Dr. Sinclair said you wanted to have a word.
Yes, where is he?
Downstairs, chatting with Ivor. I think he's found a new pen.
Now, Paul, you mustn't joke. That's what I wanted to talk to you about.
But it is a joke, Mother. There's nothing wrong with Ivor. He's as fit as anyone. You know it, I know it, everyone knows it.
I know no such thing. He's been a constant source of worry to me. Even now, I have my doubts about leaving.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. The break will do you good. Anyway, you'll be back in a few months.
Even so, I want you to promise me, Paul, that you'll take care of him.
Ivor? Oh, Mother.
But please, Paul, I know you all believe it's all in the mind. Well, maybe, but he does get terribly low at times, so please see he isn't left alone.
If you expect me to wet and nurse him, what about my studies? And then there's Kit.
Kit?
Oh, really?
Oh, you mean your girlfriend. I'm sure she won't mind if you take him out with you from time to time.
Mind? Of course she'll mind. Do you think she wants him hanging around all the time? He's such a pain in the neck, with his constant moaning and groaning.
Well, I see it's quite impossible for me to...
All right, for heaven's sake. Don't let's have any dramas. Well, enough with that Burke down there.
Paul!
All right. I've said okay, haven't I?
Hey, remember me?
I'm sorry, darling. I was miles away.
More like a few feet, I'd say.
How do you mean?
That painful brother of yours. How long has he been up there now?
I don't know. He's getting me down, kid, you know that? He tags along all the time, putting a damper on everything. At the flat, he makes it almost impossible for me to practice.
What's he doing out there?
Waiting for me to go and ask if there's anything wrong.
And is there?
Of course not. We've had this for years. Doctor, sanatorium, you name it. No one can find a single thing wrong with him.
Shall I have a word with him? Sometimes an outsider, you know, but...
You think that'll do any good?
It can't do any harm.
I wish you joy.
Oh, thanks, kid.
What's up with you today?
Oh.
Hey there, Gaspard. Well, make room. This is heavy.
Sorry.
I suppose you've taken all your pills.
They don't help.
I'm sure they don't.
Does Paul have to keep going over and over that blasted thing?
Here's your tea. Yes, he does. You know how important this concert is to him.
Yes, of course, but...
There are no buts, either. It's important, and you don't help.
I don't know what you mean.
Well, of course you do. How can Paul concentrate on his studies with you perpetually on his back, complaining of this ache and that ache?
I can't help being ill.
You're not ill. You may be sick, but you're not ill.
What does that mean?
If there was an Olympic medal for hypochondria, I think you'd take the gold.
There's no call to be insulting, Kit.
How's your headache?
I don't know why you're being so uptight. I've never done you any harm.
Haven't you? Whenever you hurt Paul, you hurt me. It's becoming something of a habit. If you think I'm going to stand by and watch you ruin his career, then think again, because that's what you want, isn't it? You're not ill either, you're jealous.
After this episode with Kit, Ivor miraculously appeared to have very few bouts of ill health. He kept himself fairly much to himself, and on the odd occasion when he and Kit came into contact, there was an air of cool restraint between them. Paul gratefully accepted this respite from Ivor's nagging interruptions and continued his studies unhampered until the day of his debut at the Royal Albert Hall.
Take another call before they tear the place apart.
Well done, my boy. First rate. Come, they're calling for you.
Phew.
Exhausted.
Elated, yes, and exhausted.
Drink?
Oh, no thanks, darling. I've had enough tonight to swim in it. You know...
What's up?
I'm a bit disappointed.
Ivor?
Yes, I know you and he haven't exactly hit it off lately. All the same...
I'm surprised he wasn't there. That's why I watched from the side. I didn't think he'd want me... Oh, well, what does it matter?
Where is he, anyway? Ivor? Ivor?
He's out, obviously. Who knows? Maybe he's actually found himself a girlfriend.
And she'd have to be Florence Nightingale to put up with him.
Oh, well, let's just be grateful for his absence. I do love you, darling.
You are going to marry me, aren't you?
Are you asking or telling?
A bit of both.
Well, no.
I can't afford a ring. I'm not just yet, anyway.
You're putting me off now? Oh, no, not that easily. Even if it means... taking on that sickly brother of yours.
No. That's one thing we don't need.
Darling.
Oh, blast.
Ivor, it's got to be.
Speedwell 5269? Yes, speaking. Who is this? I see. What? When? Oh, that's stupid. Is he all right? Yes, of course, right away.
What is it?
Ivor, he's in Hampstead General. Poisoned himself.
What?
An accident, apparently.
Well, you don't poison yourself by accident.
My brother does, apparently. Well, come on.
I'm sorry, Paul.
You really take the biscuit, don't you? What happened?
Well, I know you don't believe me. Nobody believes me, but I had this pain.
Go on.
At first I thought it was indigestion, something like that.
That's a pretty straightforward diagnosis for you, isn't it?
Please. I was in such agony I didn't watch what I was doing. I grabbed the first bottle I could lay my hands on. I thought it was fruit sorts.
And what was it?
I don't know.
Well, you may be interested to know. I had a word with the house doctor. She tells me that after they'd pumped out your stomach, they could find nothing but pure alkali.
That's not possible.
Now, either you're lying, or in serious need of psychiatric treatment. Which is it?
I'm not lying, Paul.
Now, I'll tell you what I think. I think you planned this deliberately. I think you planned this to happen in the middle of my concert. Only as luck would have it, your timing was all wrong, and it happened after it was all over.
No.
And I'm sick of this whole deal. I've had you, Ivor, up to here. Do you hear me? Just get off my back, will you? I'll see you back at the flat.
Paul? Paul? Nurse?
Nothing would convince Paul that this latest escapade was not a deliberate piece of contrivance on Ivor's part to draw attention away from Paul on the night of his triumph. In point of fact, on this occasion, Ivor had not been shamming. The fact that he'd vomited on the way to the hospital had been carelessly overlooked, and it was this which had saved his life. However, Ivor continued to have pains in his stomach, but this time kept it very much to himself for fear of incurring Paul's anger. Then, on the night prior to Paul's leaving for a concert tour...
What the devil's going on?
Must be somewhere.
What do you think you're up to in the middle of the night?
Go away.
What are you looking for?
Tablets.
What tablets?
What does it matter to you what tablets?
Look, if you're messing me about again...
No one's messing you about. I didn't ask you to come in the bathroom with me. Just get back to bed and leave me alone.
I want to know what you're looking for.
I told you, tablets. Oh, there they are.
Don't you want water?
I don't need it.
Good. Now, maybe we can get some sleep. I've got to be up in 4 hours.
Then get to bed and leave me alone.
What the blazes? Ivor?
Paul, help me, please.
What is it? What's wrong with you?
Quickly, I need a doctor. I really do.
All right, all right. Come on, come on.
Oh, Paul, hurry.
Hello? Dr. Sinclair? Come over right away. Oh, I'm sorry, it's Paul here. I was lying on the floor in agony. I think it's really bad this time. Hurry, please. Dr. Sinclair's on his way. Ivor? Ivor? Oh, no. Ivor? Ivor? Oh, no.
Ivor arrived at the hospital too late. He died from peritonitis in the ambulance. Paul never forgave himself for his brother's death, though who is to say where the true blame lay? Had Paul acted sooner, possibly Ivor's life could have been saved. But where illness is concerned, so many factors govern the result, and the hypochondriac never aids his own cause.
Medical File. the documented story of the men and women who in hospitals, research centers, and lonely surgeries guard our lives. Listen again next week for another true story from Medical File.